Initially, we were seeing reports of a fair number of people coming off ibrutinib because of tolerability issues. I heard different numbers quoted, 30%, even more than that. But I wonder what it is nowadays, now that it's been out there a while and people are kind of used to it. In your own hands, what do you see? What's your estimate based on data and your own experience about the chance of somebody having to actually stop because of tolerability issues?
So I definitely wonder the same thing about the real-world experiences, whether they'd be different if done now, just since people do have such a lot more experience with ibrutinib. I would say in my experience and in our experience on the clinical trials we've done at Ohio State, probably 20% or so will come off at some point because of toxicity. But yeah, the real-world numbers are much higher than that. In some cases, almost half of people, especially in the frontline setting. And I think that's probably related more to the tolerance of the toxicity for both the patient and the physician. But I think now that we know much more about the efficacy, it's a better calculation in terms of balancing the efficacy and the tolerability.
I think also people have different ways they manage tolerability issues. Do you find that dose reduction is helpful?
For some toxicities, I think it is helpful. Like, I've had a few people with mouth sores, and that tends to respond well to a dose reduction. Sometimes the joint pain does, although I haven't had a lot of success with responsiveness to reduction in the dose. Things that don't respond, I don't think the hypertension improves with dose reduction. The atrial fibrillation risk, I don't think changes with a dose reduction. Occasionally, the bruising does decrease with a dose reduction, too.
There's also, I guess, a difference between how people manage tolerability toxicity issues. And I'm curious if you've had patients who developed atrial fibrillation on ibrutinib and what you do if their disease is under good control and otherwise they're tolerating therapy well.
And my approach to AFib with ibrutinib has really changed a lot over time. So at first, most of the patients that were being treated with ibrutinib didn't have a lot of other options. And, I would just push through and try to keep them on the drug, try to keep them on the full dose and manage the atrial fibrillation as best we could. Now we have venetoclax, and although off-label, we have acalabrutinib, which is FDA approved for mantle cell lymphoma and doesn't appear to have as much risk of atrial fibrillation as ibrutinib does. So in my practice now, I generally am taking people off of ibrutinib if they develop AFib. And either if they still need disease control, I'll switch them to acalabrutinib, or sometimes I've even taken people off and then, just waited until progression and then treated with acalabrutinib. It's kind of interesting because there's a lot of variability in terms of how people do when you take them off the drug. So some people you can take off the drug and they will go years before they need additional treatment. Some people will need more treatment very quickly. And it's hard to predict based upon their level of disease control or how long they've been on the drug.